The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, First Canto, Chapter Number 15, Texts Number 22, 23, and 24, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on June 16, 2014, in Pretoria, South Africa.
Om Namo Bhagavat. Te Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Rajan Tvaya Anuprishtanam Suhridam Na Suhritpure Vipra Shapa Vimudhanam Nignatam Mushtibi Mita Varanim Madaram Pitva Mada Unman Umatita Chetasam Ajanatam Eva Anyonyam Chatu Pancha Avasheshita Rajam Tvaya Nuprishtanam Suhridam Na Suhrit Pare Vipashapa Vimudhanam Nagnatam Mushtibir Mita Varuning Madirang Pitva Madon Matita Chetasam Ajanatam Miyan Yon Yang Chitu Pancha Vasheshita Rajangstvayanu Prishtanam Suhridam Na Suhrit Pare Vriprishapa Vimudanam Nignatam Mushtibir Mita Varuning Madarang Patva Madam Matita Chetasam Ajanatam Miyan Yon Yang Chitu Pancha Vasheshita Rajan, O King, Tvaya, by you, Anuprishtanam, as you inquired, Suhridam, of friends and relatives, Na, our Suhrit Pare. In the city of Dwarka, Vipra, the Brahmanas, Shapa, by the curse of Vimudanam, of the befooled, Nignatam, of the killed, Mushtibi, with bunches of sticks, Mita, among themselves, Varunim, fermented rice, Madiram, wine, Pitva, having drunk, Muda Unmandita, being intoxicated, Chaitasa, of that mental situation, Ajanatam, of the unrecognized, Eva, like, Anyomyam, one another, Chatu, four, pancha five of aveshesita now remaining. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Okay, since you have asked me about our friends and relatives in the city of Dwarka, I will inform you that all of them were cursed by the Brahmins. And as a result, they all became intoxicated with wine made of putrefied rice and fought among themselves with sticks, not even recognizing one another. Now all but four or five of them are dead and gone. I could speak on this verse, but I'd like to be able to read a nice purport of Prabhupada, because there's nothing like Prabhupada's purports, so we will go to the next verse, which has a purport. Text number 24. Prayane tad bhagavata ishvarasya vicheshtitam mito nagnanti bhutani bhavayanti chayanmita. Translation and purport by Prabhupada. Factually, this is all due to the supreme will of the Lord, the personality of Godhead. Sometimes people kill one another, and at other times they protect one another. Purport. According to the anthropologists, there is nature's law of struggle for existence and survival of the fittest. But they do not know that behind the law of nature is the supreme direction of the supreme personality of Godhead. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is confirmed that the law of nature is executed under the direction of the Lord. Whenever, therefore, there is peace in the world, it must be known that it is due to the good will of the Lord, and whenever there is upheaval in the world, it is also due to the supreme will of the Lord. Not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord. Whenever, therefore, there is disobedience of the established rules enacted by the Lord, there is war between men and nations. The surest way to the path of peace, therefore, is dovetailing everything to the established rule of the Lord. The established rule is that whatever we do, whatever we eat, whatever we sacrifice, or whatever we give in charity must be done to the full satisfaction of the Lord. No one should do anything, eat anything, sacrifice anything, or give anything in charity against the will of the Lord. Discretion is the better part of valor, and one must learn how to discriminate between actions which may be pleasing to the Lord and those which may not be pleasing to the Lord. An action is thus judged by the Lord's pleasure or displeasure. There is no room for personal whims. We must always be guided by the pleasure of the Lord. Such action is called yoga karmasu kaushalam, or actions performed which are linked with the Supreme Lord. That is the art of doing a thing perfectly. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamala Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Bharijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Ladita Shri Vishakam Vitamsha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashyat Yadeshatarine. This is quite interesting to think that there can be a war or an upheaval due to the supreme will of the Lord. Isn't Krishna the well-wisher? One could ask. How could he will that there should be some war? That's a puzzlement that one may have when reading this purport. Well, we have to look at the entire the purport and understand what's going on here. What are the dynamics, karmic dynamics going on here? If one actually acts in accordance with the satisfaction of the Lord, then by the supreme will of the Lord, there will be peace and happiness throughout the world. But if one ignores the injunction to do everything for the satisfaction of the Lord, engages in all kinds of grossly sinful activities, killing cows, killing babies, etc., 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 then your karma is awaiting you. Is it? And that war or upheaval is simply karma, that's all it is. If you commit war against innocent cows and innocent babies, you're going to get, it's going to come bouncing back in your face, you see. Just like Prabhupada said, just like during the Vietnam War in the U.S., so many young boys were sent to the slaughterhouse in Vietnam. They tried to send me also, but they called me down and sent me off to Vietnam but I told them I didn't want to kill. And there was a friendly psychologist who got me out. An anti-war psychologist helped me out. He put down that I was psychologically unfit to fight war. But anyway, Prabhupada said that because they were sending their mothers to the slaughterhouse, the cows, now their sons must also go to the slaughterhouse in Vietnam. So these wars are actually karmic reactions for sinful activities. Sometimes you see the anti-war protesters, you know, they go on the big marches, and after the march they go down to McDonald's and have a hamburger. You understand? Doesn't work. If you want to create peace in the world, you must be an instrument of peace. You can't kill unborn babies and kill innocent cows and have peace in the world. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. If you want peace, you have to give peace to others. If you commit violence on unborn babies by abortion, and you commit violence on innocent cows by slaughtering them, it's going to come bouncing back in your face. You see, war is it's simply a karmic reaction, that's all. So the Krishna Consciousness Movement is the genuine peace movement in the world, because we are teaching you how to be peaceful, how to truly be peaceful, not kill your babies, not kill the cows, you see. We're teaching you how to become peaceful. Everyone wants peace. They go to such great lengths to protect a cat or a dog. There was some incident in the U.S. Some cat fell down through some pipe inside a building. Or a dog, I forget what it was, a cat or a dog. Many, many stories. This cat fell down through some pipe, and the fire department came, and with a great endeavor, all these men, they rescued the cat or the dog from the pipe. It was a big thing in the news. This cat and dog was rescued. You see? But why don't they rescue the cows? See, it was big news. A dog was rescued, but the fire department came and rescued a dog, you see. Why don't they rescue the cows? Or how about rescuing a baby? Some doctors are about ready to kill a baby. They come in and rescue that baby from being murdered by the doctor. why that isn't in the news, you see. Do you understand how what kind of culture we're living in, you see? In Mauritius now, I was told it's illegal to educate your own children. You have to let the government educate them. If you want to educate them yourself, that's illegal. But it's legal to kill your kids. You can kill your kid, that's legal, but if you educate him, you're a criminal. That's the law in Mauritius. You can't homeschool your kids, it's illegal, but you can murder him, that's all right. You can abort an unborn child, you see. So just see how demoniac the governments are on this planet. And we can, in this kind of demoniac governments, we can expect war after war after war after war after war. It's unavoidable. Unavoidable. When you throw a tennis ball on the wall, it's going to bounce back in your face. If you commit violence, you're going to get violence back on you. So we have to learn some lessons from these writings of Srila Prabhupada, how we can actually have peace in the world. Each one of us must become instruments of peace, ambassadors of peace, by not inflicting violence on unborn babies and innocent cows. You see? A devotee is naturally nonviolent because he understands the soul is present from the very moment of conception. Actually, the soul is present within the semina of the male. When he injects the semina into the female, then that soul develops a body if there's pregnancy is successful. You see? Devotee understands the soul is present, therefore you can't abort a child at any stage. They just say it's flesh, it's not a living being, it's just some flesh. But actually, that living being is there from the very moment of conception. Even before conception, the living entity is present in the semina of the male. Therefore, one should not waste his semina masturbating or having illicit sex. You see? So, devotee is naturally not going to abort because he understands there's a living entity in there who's now gotten the opportunity to get a human form. After 8,400,000 species of life, now this living entity has finally gotten the opportunity to take birth as a human being so that he can become Krishna conscious. And if I abort that living entity, I've done the greatest crime upon that living entity. After he went through 8,400,000 species, and now kill it, you see. This is like somebody across the desert. He made a 1,000-mile journey, and miraculously he made it across the desert with only a little bit of water. He just made it in. They made it back to the civilization across the desert, and someone just shoots him dead. After he survived the desert, somebody shoots him. What a tragedy that would be. Some person heroically crossed the desert with hardly any facilities. He made it. It's like the greatest survival story in the history of the world. And then someone shoots him dead as soon as he gets back to civilization. You see, that's what abortion is like, you see. And then the cows, just consider how dear the cow is. What an amazing creature. Can you eat grass? Can any of you digest grass? No, we cannot eat it. But the cow eats the grass, which we cannot eat, and turns it into the miracle food milk, which nourishes the brain tissues for Vedic understanding with all vitamin values. We don't realize it now because the milk is adulterated. You don't get... That's why I ask for organic milk, you see. But the milk is so adulterated now. They homogenize it. It makes it harder to digest. People have lactose intolerance, you see, because the milk has been adulterated. It's not the pure, natural milk that we get in the store. It's homogenized. Milk is not supposed to be homogenized. That's an artificial process. But the natural milk from the cow... You offer to Krishna, you drink that milk, you get very good brain, you get longevity, you get strength. It's the miracle food. Now show me a dog or a cat who can produce milk like that, like cow milk. They cannot do it. The cow is so beneficial, even the stool of the cow dung is beneficial. If you go to India, you'll see they take the cow patties and they put it on the wall and they let it dry and then they use it for fuel. Instead of cutting down trees to cook, they just take the cow dung and cook with cow dung. It's actually the Prabhupada said that is the first class cooking is on cow dung, you see. It's better than wood, actually. They cook on cow. They use that for cooking, cow dung. They smear it sometimes in the kitchen floor to make an antiseptic. It's antiseptic. But what about dog dung? You get diphtheria from dog dung. You see? And the dog bites you, he barks at you, ruff, ruff, ruff. But the dog is our friend and the cow kill it. You see what a demoniac culture it is? The dog is our best friend and kill the cow. The whole fire department can come out and rescue some dog trapped in a building. It makes it to the CNN news, you see? But cows are being mercilessly slaughtered every day by thousands and millions. And we're wondering, what can we do to stop war? What can we do to stop the war in the Ukraine? What can we do to stop the war in Iraq? What can we do to stop this war, that war? The politicians are complete fools. They're baboons. They don't realize because we're engaged in all of this sinful activity, war is naturally going to happen. They don't realize it. The politicians have to be trained how to follow the footsteps of the great politicians, like Parikshit Maharaj and Yudhisthira Maharaj, you see. The Bhagavad Gita is meant for politicians. Do you know that? It's a guidebook for politicians. Imam Rajarshiyo Vidu. It's meant for the saintly kings. This knowledge is meant for the politicians. But they're not taking this, you see. Because we don't have qualified Brahmins, the intellectuals, the scientists, the philosophers, the college professors. They're all sinful rascals themselves, smoking, having homosex, you see? They're rascals. Just like one professor at the University of Texas, he told all the students, I have a boyfriend, I have a girlfriend, go for it, you know, buy sex, enjoy. You can have sex with boys, girls, roles, just have sex with everyone, you know. And he was okay, no problem. But if a professor talks about God in the classroom, he'll be fired. You can encourage all the students to have bisexual relationships, but you can't encourage God consciousness. This is demoniac civilization. You see, one of our members, he told us he was in the class. He said our professor was encouraging us to become bisexuals. No problem. He can keep his position, but God consciousness. Actually, at that University of Texas, which is the largest university in the U.S., emblazoned on a big building in the center of the campus called the Tower Building, this huge, tall building that many students jump off of to commit suicide during finals. It's emblazoned. Know you. It's actually a Bible verse. Jesus says, "Know you the truth, and the truth shall set you free." It's a beautiful verse from the Lord Jesus. Know you the truth, and the truth shall set you free. But is any professor allowed to speak the actual truth in the college classroom? No. If he does, he'll be fired. So just see the hypocrisy. Know you the truth, and the truth shall set you free, but they're not allowed to speak the truth. It's just an empty slogan. You see? This is the Brahmins, the professors, the educators. If the educators are of this caliber, what do you expect of the politicians who've been trained by the educators? And if the Brahmins are corrupt, the politicians are corrupt, then what do you expect about the businessmen? They're going to be greedy capitalists exploiting the workers, isn't it? And the poor worker class, they're exploited by the Brahmins, exploited by the Kshatriyas, exploited by the Vaishyas. What they can do? They just have to suffer, the worker class. So this Vedic culture is the absolute necessity for this planet, beginning with the Brahmins, beginning with the educated people. You see, we want to educate you how to become learned Brahmanas. Men and women, all you men and women, you're the net future leaders. We want to teach you how to become Brahmanas, actual Brahmanas, who know what is the actual truth, who know what is the absolute truth, who know how to live in accordance with that absolute truth, and who know how to teach that absolute truth to others so they can follow the same pathway, you see. This Krishna consciousness movement means creating a class of Brahmanas, the intellectual priestly class. It's very important. We want that many of you will come forward now and become learned in this philosophy and become expert in practicing and in teaching this philosophy so that we can make this whole country, this rainbow nation, a true rainbow nation, you see. A rainbow is very beautiful. I remember one of my visits to Mauritius. It was the most amazing rainbow. One of those went all the way, you know. Started, you can see the whole thing. I got a picture of it, like from here. It started on the ground here and went all the way up, and you can see the whole thing from. It was a beautiful 180 degrees rainbow, you see. So what is the real meaning of rainbow nation? Krishna consciousness. Krishna is the source of the rainbow. You see, actually Krishna is the rainbow. Just like he says, of all wonderful and beautiful things in this world, it is the manifestation of Krishna. So the rainbow is a manifestation of Krishna. So you should make now this rainbow nation a true manifestation of Krishna, a Krishna conscious nation, you see. You should inspire all your countrymen of whatever ethnic background, the white, the black, the Indian, or Chinese, bring everyone together unto this rainbow of Krishna consciousness and be the true rainbow nation for the world, to show the whole world how to live on the transcendental platform, how to live in perfect peace and harmony by making God the center. Isha Varsham Idam Sarvam Yatkincham Jagajam Jagat Taina Chiktaina Bunjita Magrida Kashaspiddhanam. This is stated in the Sri Isha Upanishad. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. Therefore, one should accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, knowing well to whom everything belongs. So let's do that now in South Africa, you see. Let's make this a true Ishavasha nation that puts God in the center at every step, you see. And then all the corruption, all the pollution, all the sinful activities, all the suffering, all the misery that people are going through every day in this country, it will go away and everybody will become happy here. It'll be a nation of blissful people, totally blissful people. Everyone chanting the name of God, dancing in ecstasy and honoring the remnants of the Lord's offerings. So are there any questions? I've read that to be forgiven or to atone, one just needs to sincerely regret past deeds and change his ways. We see that vegetarians have stopped killing cows, etc., yet they are also killed in wars along with devotees and saintly people. Are they being held accountable for past sins? If so, why? They have reformed. Actually, being a vegetarian doesn't mean that you stop killing. Your killing is not as bad, but you're still killing. Actually, Prabhupada told us, you may be surprised to hear this, but Prabhupada told us in Atlanta, he said, whether you kill a poor man or a rich man, you're a murderer. So whether you kill a cow or a vegetable, you're guilty of killing. So to be a vegetarian means you haven't really been reformed from killing, you just stopped killing a certain class of living beings. You're still engaged in killing. Well, they say, but you devotees are killing, but we are offering that food to Krishna, that those vegetables, those are being offered to Krishna. So that relieves us from the sin of killing. What can I offer my meat to Krishna then and be relieved from the sin of killing? Sure, you could if he would accept it. But he's a vegetarian, so you can't offer Krishna meat. He won't accept it. So, sometimes even devotees are killed along with non-devotees, just like there was a bunch of pilgrims in India, about 60 of them, several buses going up to the Himalayas, and one of the buses went over the road and fell into the river, and some of our ISKCON devotees from Russia were killed. One man was swept away by the river. They never even found his body, and two of them were killed on the spot. There's a very great tragedy that happened recently, and it happens sometimes. Devotees are also killed in different calamities. We also had, I remember when I was one of my godbrothers, Brajajana Prabhu, yeah. There was a, this was in the deep south, in the days of the white people were very prejudiced against blacks, and they didn't like the devotees either. Devotees were preaching in Knoxville, Tennessee, and somebody threw a firebomb through the window in where the brahmacharis were sleeping. And this one, my godbrother was burned to death. And Brajajana Prabhu was burned to death. So you may ask, well, why devotees are suffering like this if they've given up their sinful activities? Well, Krishna sometimes has plans for a devotee to serve him in a different universe. So he just takes him out of his body because he has another service. Time for you to shift from the Pujari department to the accounting department or something like that, you know. It happens sometimes. A devotee is shifted from one department to another in the universal cosmic Sankirtan movement. So our dear devotee, he was swept away by the river. They never found his body. And those two others were killed in the impact when the bus fell into the water. So that happens sometimes. Krishna has a customized program for every single living entity, how to come back to him. So a devotee leaves the body, there's some arrangement of Krishna for them. We can't know these things, but we have to trust in Krishna. How do you tell the difference between Maya and karma? aren't abortions part of karmic reactions? Karma and Maya are closely interrelated. It's true that if a baby is aborted, he's getting his karma from being an aborter for having aborted someone else in his previous lifetime. Does that mean I'm not guilty? I'm just giving him his karma. So I'm not guilty of anything. I aborted him, but it was his karma to get aborted, so I'm not guilty of anything. You could say. Or I can murder you and say, it was your karma to be murdered, so I'm not guilty. I just happened to be the one who pulled the trigger, but it was your karma, Prabhu. I can't blame me. I just murdered you, but actually it was your karma to be murdered. It doesn't work quite like them. In other words, it's a fact that it's your karma, but if you're the instrument diverting that karma, you're also karmically implicated. Don't you be the instrument of delivering the karma. Because then you become karmically implicated for being the instrument of delivering the karma. Tell me.
In the human form, aren't we supposed to end the karma?
Yes. We're supposed to come to the platform of akarma by surrendering to Krishna. No karma. What then happens to those aborted souls? If someone is aborted, what happens to them? Well, it depends on how many abortions they were guilty of committing. If they aborted 10 kids, then they'll be aborted 10 times, you see. If they were an abortion doctor, they could be aborted hundreds of times before they actually see the light of day again. If they only aborted one kid, they can be aborted one time and then they get another chance to take birth again later on to come out again and see the light. Would you say this evil being done works together with that soul's bad karma? Absolutely. What exactly causes the loss of godly consciousness, or rather Krishna consciousness, which leads to the current state that the modern world is in? Don't you know of any historical events that made major contributions to the manufacturing of the current Krishna conscious society? This is an interesting question. Okay, let's deal with the first one. Okay. What has led to this cause, the loss of Krishna consciousness in the world? The material nature is a downward whirlpool. I'll give you a mundane example. Somebody starts off saying, well, I think I'll try a little alcohol. And they think, well, I'm not building it as much as a buzz out of alcohol as I'd like to get. Let me try some marijuana. See if I can get a better buzz out of that. And, well, I'm not getting that great of a buzz out of marijuana. Why don't we try a little, you know, little cocaine, you know. See what kind of buzz I get out of that. Well, I'm not really get as much buzz as I'd like out of cocaine. Let's go all out and go for heroin. Yeah. I'll get a really buzz out of heroin. So the point is, once you go into intoxication, you see, the beginning you're all excited. Wow, it's so great being drunk, but now I'm not really satisfied. I got to try it by a little heavier intoxication. Then, so in other words, the material nature sucks you into deeper and deeper entanglement. You become a little entangled with Maya, and you become a little more entangled with Maya, and a little more entangled with Maya. That's why the ages go through this progression. You have Satya Yuga, which is 100% piety. You have Treta Yuga, 75% piety. You have Dwarpa Yuga, 50% piety. And Kali Yuga with 25% piety going down to zero. Because that's the way the material nature works. As soon as you're in touch with the material nature, it contaminates you a little bit more every day. When you're in contact with the material nature every day, you become a little bit more contaminated. Just like I remember back in the 50s, I can see it in the U.S., growing up in the U.S., you know. In the 50s, there was even a bumper sticker. It's kind of funny, but it's actually true. It said, do you remember when sex was dirty and the air was clean? When I was a kid in high school, if you got a girl pregnant, I mean, my God, you married her. Of course you would marry her. I mean, you know, there was no abortions. And if you got a girl pregnant, you just do the right thing and you'd marry her. And the boys would do that if they got a girl pregnant, you see. And the air was clean. Well, the air wasn't very polluted in those days. You see. But then, go fast forward 30 years later, the air is polluted like anything. The air is dirty. Now sex is considered clean. You can have sex whenever you want. If somebody wants to marry more than one wife, that's illegal. You can go to jail. But if you want to have sex with 20 women, that's okay. You see how, I mean, the laws are so crazy. It is natural for the society to go further and further away from God consciousness. I studied American history at the University of Texas and in literature, the history of American literature. And I was amazed to see that all the literature in the first early days of America, the USA, it was all devotional. I was amazed. We just studied, you know, American literature in chronological order. In the first part of the book, it was nothing but devotional literature. Absolutely everything was devotional. There was not one piece of sectarian literature in the whole first days of America. It was all devotional. You see? So gradually, you see. Now it's hardly any devotional literature. You see, they're all reading garbage, you see. So this is the natural tendency in the material world that it's individuals and societies when they are not actually taking up the progressive path of spiritual advancement, they will naturally become more and more and more and more degraded. That's the nature of the material world. It's the nature of the material world. So do you know of any historical events that made major contributions to the manufacturing of the current Krishna conscious society? Oh, there's so many. Wow. Prabhupada getting on the boat? That's a major one of the greatest moments in history was when Prabhupada got on the Jaladuta and he came to the U.S. These are the great moments in history, you see. When Prabhupada met his Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur in 1922 at Ultadanga, Calcutta, and he came into the room, actually didn't even want to go. But his friend, what was his name? Narendranath Mukherjee? What was his friend's name, Devi?
Narendra Malik.
Narendra Malik insisted that by Acharan Day, come to hear this spiritual master visiting Calcutta from Mayapur. That's one of the greatest moments in history. When Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, as soon as he comes in, a college-educated young man, he says, you should spread Krishna consciousness to the English. There was no relationship. He's a guest. He wasn't a member of the ashram. He was a guest who came to hear a lecture. He immediately said, he was given an instruction. You should spread Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking world. You see? Abhay Charan argued. What do you mean? We're a dependent nation. Come on, we got to do Gandhi's thing, you know? We got to liberate India from these Britishers. What are you talking about, spreading Krishna consciousness to the West? We have to liberate India from the Britishers. He was arguing like them. But Bhaktisiddhanta smashed his arguments, and he realized he was defeated, and he has just met his spiritual master, you see. Prabhupada said, practically he initiated me. He didn't actually get initiated for 11 more years in 1933, but Prabhupada said, practically initiated me. Actually, it's a fact, sometimes it happens. Some person will come, and they'll hear a guru, you know, an ISKCON guru will preach, and they'll know, that's my guru. There's no initiation, but in their heart they know, now I have heard my spiritual master. This is my guru. It's called practical initiation. So that's the first step. Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati giving Prabhupada the order. Prabhupada coming out on the pursuance of that order in 1965 on the Jaladuta. 1966, July 1966, forming ISKCON. Formally incorporating the International Society for Krishna Consciousness in the state of New York. And Prabhupada actually said those kirtans in Tompkins Square Park were the real beginning of my movement. That's when it really took off, you see. That's when it really took off. Prabhupada went with the disciples out to Tompkins Square Park, and it became the thing to go there and chant with the Swami, you see. It became the thing to do. It became a whole, they became, you know, a big thing with the youth chanting Hare Krishna mantra. So there's so many historical events that have led up to the current Krishna conscious society. You can study the history of Krishna consciousness in South Africa when Shuddhi Prabhu came here, risking his life. Practically, they were going to put him to death. It was so heavy. His parents had to come and rescue him from the secret police. The South African Gestapo, they were considering putting him to death. Shuddhi Prabhu, my dear God brother, you see. So there's in so many great historical events all over the world that have led to what we have now today. there's hundreds of them, and they add up to what we have now. I look at, you know, acquiring the land in Mayapur. That was a great struggle also. Publishing every book that's published just so many historical. There's hundreds of them. And there's many more exciting historical events to come. The first Ratha Yatra, the first Ratha Yatra in San Francisco, on the back of a pickup truck. That was the Ratha Yatra card. It was a flatbed truck. Actually, they didn't have a proper car the first go. So there's so many great events that have led up to the present Krishna consciousness movement. And now, you can be a part of it. You can make history here in Pretoria by your Krishna consciousness, by your preaching. Now up to you. You all should make history here to propel this movement forward with even, you know, greater potency. Prabhupada said that I have done 10 times more than my spiritual master, and now you, my disciples, must do 10 times more than me. So what does that mean about you, grand disciples? It means you have to do 100 times more than the Prabhupada disciples. That means you have to do, 10 times more than the Prabhupada disciples. That means you have to do 100 times more than Prabhupada. That's what he wants. And Prabhupada made 5,000 disciples. Now you should make, what's that? What's 5,000 times 100? 50,000? Huh?
500,000.
100 times. 50,000. You should all have 50,000 disciples each in the future. Each of you make 50,000 disciples. So, yeah, question.
Actually, the question was, what led to the manufacturing of this Krishna consciousness society? Because, as you say, when you read the ancient literature, it was more of a devotional literature.
I'm a little deaf, so I'm going to have him be your amplifier.
What led to the downgrading of Krishna consciousness?
What?
What led to this Krishna consciousness state?
What brought it down?
Yeah, what brought it down, yes.
Well, there are major events which stand out in history. 5,000 years ago, the king was in the forest, and he got a little thirsty. And he went to the hut of a sage to ask for a drink of water. But the sage was deep, absorbed in meditation without any external consciousness. So the king, he's a great saintly king, pure devotee. But somehow or other, he became a little disturbed. The sage did not receive him. So he put a dead, he garlanded the sage with a, it's like you gave me a garland of flowers. He garlanded the sage with a dead snake. And the sage understood. The sage wasn't disturbed. The sage is not disturbed. He's very tolerant. He understood that actually I should have received the king, so I deserve this dead snake because I didn't receive the king. The sage didn't mind at all. But his son, named Sringi, when he heard about it, became very disturbed. Now, in those days, the Brahmins, the sages, the priestly class, they had great power. They could utter anything they wanted to with their mouth, and it would happen. They could cast any spell they wanted. They could do white or black magic. They could just say whatever they wanted to say, and it would come true. They were so powerful. So this boy, because he was the son of a sage, he had that power. And he said, I curse the king, that in 7 days he'll be bitten by a snake bird. There's a type of snake that also flies in the sky. It's called a snake bird. They're very dangerous. They can just come flying in and attack you. They're still there in India, the snake birds. It's a very dangerous type of snake. It flies through the air. It's a flying snake. So he cursed that the king would die being bitten by a snake bird within 7 days. And that's what brought the current age of Kali in, you see. The father was so disturbed, he said, oh, you have cursed Maharaj Parikshit. The greatest blame will be on the Brahmin community from this nonsense you have done. He was so disturbed that his son had done that, but it was too late. He gave the curse. He was a stupid little boy, and became overwhelmed with anger. So that's what led to the age of Kali that we're in right now. Sringi's curse. Okay, so our time is up, and we thank you all very much. There will be a home program later on that I think everyone knows about. And we're just delighted that you all have come today. You are the intelligent class. We're not sleeping. You've come to hear the Bhagavatam. Thank you very much. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Sankarshan Das Adhikar Maharaj ki jai.